We are now bringing on a congressman who is in the Freedom Caucus, who leans into the fight on a regular basis, and I think pursues or at least fights for all the things that you just said. So thank you for joining us on the Conservative Voice. And if we're just going to switch over now and welcome Scott Perry. He is the U.S. representative of Pennsylvania District 10, member of the Conservative Freedom Caucus. And we're grateful to have you back on the show again. Welcome, Congressman Perry.
Well, great to be with you this afternoon. Thanks for the opportunity.
And you heard a little bit, I think, of the conversation we had with EJ just now. That was EJ Antoni, who had been considered a candidate to lead BLS.
Yeah.
Was nominated.
Yeah. Right.
But the Senate wasn't very interested in having someone with his particular bent involved in the BLS. For reasons that we discussed earlier, but
so unfortunate.
It really is. I mean, it just shows you that their interest is not necessarily on just accurate numbers. It really is on using, I think, that office as a political tool. Because I the reason people don't rely on those numbers is because they're wrong, and we all know they're wrong.
Yeah.
You know, but if you're out in the media, average citizens, Joe Main Street doesn't know those numbers are fake. They don't know
right.
that they're conjured up to try to steer political outcomes, but welcome and here we are now in day 31 of the federal government shutdown. I will tell you that I'm okay with it myself.
Yep.
I understand there's a lot of pain for people that are federal employees who are now missing paychecks, especially the people that are actually going to work. But
right.
you know, from your perspective, I mean, what? How do you see this? Where do we stand? What are your thoughts?
Well, it's an interesting circumstance that we find ourselves in because Democrats usually don't do this. Remember, Democrats love more big government. And with all due respect to the senior senator from Pennsylvania, people saying, oh, well, he acts like a Republican. He's not acting like a Republican. He loves big government. He thinks the government is the solution to things.
Yep.
And so he votes to have it there because that's what he wants. And I'm not trying to disparage him. I'm just, you know, making the point.
The reality.
Yeah, the reality. And the other reality is, and I keep saying this to people, is that I'm the one that held my nose and voted for this thing because for two reasons primarily. I thought, you know, having the government continue to operate was the best way to get more of the Trump agenda, the make, you know, America great, America first agenda enacted. And you can't do it like, you know, the president is trying to unilaterally do what he can now without us. But, you know, the things that are enduring are legislative things that are laws that are passed that are signed by the president. And we're not in there doing that. So that was number one. Number two, you know, pragmatically, this is the best deal we were going to get, right? The Democrats weren't going to vote for anything that I wanted or that the president wanted or even that, you know, the leader in the Senate, John Thune, wanted. But they should vote for what they wanted, which was this clean continuing resolution. And we know that they wanted it because they voted for it in March.
Yeah.
We know that they wanted it because it's a continuation of Biden policy and Biden spending. I'm the one that shouldn't want it. But, you know, look, being a realist, you need to get those 7 votes in the Senate from the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, you know, you don't want to be a hardhead about things. You got to be pragmatic at some point. The only way to get them is to offer them what they can't refuse, what they already said they wanted. But suddenly, you know, between March and October, they don't want what they wanted before. They want much, much more. Much more bankruptcy. And I remind everybody in your audience, you already know this, we're over $38 trillion now. So they're complaining that the president should just wave his magic wand and flout the law, pay the SNAP benefits, pay for all these things that statutorily he can't do because there's no appropriation in process.
Mm-hmm.
Well, isn't that something a king would do?
Right,
But they don't like kings. And then you got our own governor out there, you know, virtue signaling. Like, he could solve the problem,
yeah.
right? There's a rainy day fund. SNAP benefits don't have to go unpaid in Pennsylvania. They'll be paid eventually by the federal government. Why not just pay the benefits out of the fund and make sure all these people that are relying on these programs can get them and take a victory lap. Instead, he's suing the president. For what? Like, what's he suing him for?
Right. And to be clear,
statutorily, the president can't do it, and statutorily, the governor can do it. The whole world is on its head.
And there are Republicans out there the Republican governors out there who are going to cover the SNAP benefits temporarily because they do not want their citizens to suffer. And yet you have right. Democrats openly saying the suffering's the point. The suffering is
the
what's
suffering
going
is
to
the
get.
Leverage.
Yes. And just so our listeners understand, because I know you know full well what's included in this $1.5 trillion counter proposal that they've given us that we should just go along with so we can reopen the government as Republicans are blamed. It includes $200 billion in health benefits for illegal aliens, tens of millions of dollars for climate resilience in Honduras, and LGBTQI+ democracy grants in the Western Balkans. They want to spend $2.9 million of your dollars for desert locust risk reduction in the Horn of Africa, $2 million for organizing for feminist democratic principles in Africa. And I could go on, but these are the things that these Democrats have closed right. down the government and kept our employees that are working for the government right now from getting paid.
And I'd like to see where every one of those dollars really ends up.
Right.
That's what they're fighting for, right? We're not saying, and I'm sure you're not saying, that locusts in the Horn of Africa aren't a problem.
They're not they're not our problem, though. America first.
That's the question. Are they our problem?
Right.
Are they, all of Pennsylvania's problem when we can't pay our bills, when we can't afford to pay our bills even when we're getting our paychecks? And so it's a matter of priorities. And so while they go on TV and they go on the radio and they stand out in front of audience and say that, we stand with those people who are without their benefits and we're for these hurting working families that get up in the morning and show up at work and punch a time clock. Yeah, they're not.
No.
They're not for any of that. They're for leverage. And you are caught in the crossfires and they don't care what your injuries are. They want what they want. And in most cases, it's not even what the people that are being leveraged, it's not what they want. The
right.
people that are getting up in the morning and packing a lunchbox probably don't really care a whole lot about the locusts in Africa.
Well, it is preposterous that they pretend that this is somehow in the interest of the people. These $2 trillion deficits are disastrous, in my view, for the people. This spending all over the globe, that's just corruption. I don't believe that they're actually delivering those kinds of numbers to, what is it, an LGBTQ program
in the West
in the Balkans?
Yeah.
I mean, a portion of it's probably paying for something.
I've been to the Balkans, and they don't need, nor do they want those programs. But regardless of whether they're worthy and well-minded and well-intended, regardless of all of that, the consequences of $2 trillion in deficit, the consequence for people in Pennsylvania and people across the United States of America, Americans that pay the taxes, is if you want to buy a home, the interest rates are astronomical. If you want to buy a home, the rate of the new home is to the point where you can't afford it. People are moving back in their parents' homes because they can't afford their mortgage payments. That's the direct impact of this additional meaningless, unnecessary spending. It does affect people, and that's how it affects them. They can't afford normal things in America. They cannot realize their dreams.
And I don't think, obviously, the Democrat voter doesn't put this together. They complain about inflation and then they vote for inflation. I don't think a lot of other folks put it together, though, and understand that this isn't a victimless crime, this ridiculous spending at the federal level. It hurts all of us. And, we just talked to a cattle rancher about what I call the B4 of 2025. We went through the list of things that they're seeing inflationary pressure on: feed, equipment, everything, power, all of it. And that pressure is coming from two sources, right? It's from this incredible regulatory burden the federal government, state, and sometimes local governments are putting on them. And it's the $2 trillion deficits. And yet we don't see any energy in D.C. to address this at all. It's something that we're a little bit frustrated with the Republican caucus in, because
sure, you should be frustrated.
Yes.
It's one of the look, it's embarrassing, but I'm a proud Republican. And when our conference came back from Florida last January, they had a conference down there, and they came back to Washington and said, you know, we're going to do this reconciliation, and we're going to save $300 billion. Now, if you're from a little town from Pennsylvania like I am, $300 billion is a lot of money, right? But it, first of all, it's $300 billion over 10. So now we're down to $30 billion a year.
Yeah.
Our spend is $7.2 trillion. That's a rounding error. And so people like me said, well, you got to be kidding. We're not voting for that. And it's people like me who stomped our feet and sat on our hands and got them from $300 billion to $1.6 trillion. That was in the reconciliation bill. But even so, the spending continues. It has to be stopped because it hurts Americans. And look, I talked to the president about it. He's as frustrated as I am. And he said to me, because I was stomping my feet and sitting on my hands at some point, mm-hmm. and he said, Scott, I know, but I can't get them to vote for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's talking about certain members of the House and Senate who don't want to actually save any of this money and quit spending it all.
Listen, do me a favor. Send me an email with their names, and we're just going to work on primaries for next year and 2 years from now. This is ridiculous. We sent everyone there with our demands last year after 4 catastrophic years. And to sit here and watch the obstruction from even people on our side is very, very difficult for us normal humans up here in Philly.
Oh, it is. I mean, we were looking at this shutdown and saying, now you've got 31 days of perfect time to get together and draft each of these executive orders into a bill, get it teed up so that when Congress resumes, or maybe they could do it now, but they could start voting on the agenda that we sent everyone to Washington to implement. And this could be a great 31-day period.
Right, we could be having so much fun right now.
Yeah, get the work done. And so it is very frustrating to see this.
I know it is. And look, I stand in solidarity with you. They don't call it the swamp for no reason. And there's a reason people like me don't buy a house down there to go to work. The first thing I do when session's over is get the heck out of there, because I don't want to be there, because it's just awful, and it'll destroy your soul. But we just have to stay after it. You have to keep pushing. And Washington is about leverage and forcing people to do uncomfortable things. And they don't mind forcing me to do uncomfortable things. They'll put terrible things in the military funding bill and then say, well, what are you going to do, Perry, vote against the troops?
Right.
No, I certainly don't want to vote against them, but I don't want to vote for all this other garbage. And that's how this game is played. And I will tell you, during this shutdown, Democrats have voted, 13, 14 times against reopening the government on their terms, by the way, on their terms again. I think that we should just flip the playbook, start reconciliation again, tell every committee you got to save. Warren Davidson from Ohio, representative from Ohio, has offered the plan. We can make this fit into reconciliation if we want to, and make this a completely Republican exercise. Go on offense and say, you know what, Democrats, we gave you a chance. You had your opportunity. You have now squandered it. The country's not waiting. We're not waiting. We're saving America. Let's go. That's the Republican Party I wish for, and that's the one that I keep on trying to craft, push for, advocate for, and be a messaging and a voice for.
Yeah, it is. It is the same, I think, at the state level, where there's a Freedom Caucus in the Pennsylvania legislature. And in that house, you've got people that are really aggressive and lean into the fight. And frankly, often run into pushback, not from the Democrats, from their own party, who would like them not to, launch a lawsuit.
Stop talking about that. Stop doing that. You're being impolite. The impolite Republicans.
Yeah,
sorry.
Get on the team.
Mm-hmm. Well, what it is that some people say, well, why doesn't my representative do that? And then they go talk to the representative and they say, Representative so-and-so over here is, seems to be getting after it. Why aren't you on the bill? Why aren't you saying these things? Not nobody, but some of these members of our party don't like that contrast. They don't like to be questioned on it. And look, I get it. We need those marginal districts as well, as the very, the very conservative districts where you can openly do those things. But my experience has been, as long as I'm honest with people and just tell them where I'm coming from and be respectful, you know, and let them understand that I work for them and why I choose my positions. People don't always agree with me, but I think they respect that, and they will vote for somebody that they respect and know that they can count on and be honest with. And I think that more of people in our party, if they would just take that attitude, they'd be surprised at how much more they can do to support the things that they actually said they stood for. Remember, the Freedom Caucus is, I know what it is at the federal level, and I suspect it's the same at the state. It's, you know, we'd invite Democrats if they would actually stand for this. We stand for things, all the things in the Republican Party platform. That's what we stand for. We're not less. We're not more. Just the things you said you were a Republican. So if you know, if that's who you are, then this should be easy for you. Just yes. Do what's in the platform. We'll stand right beside you.
Yeah, the playbook is laid out. They don't have to study. It's laid out in front of them. And so we know that well, there's another problem, which is if you look at Pennsylvania and the other swing states which voted for Donald Trump in this election, they had to overcome, let's say, structural problems within the election system.
Surely.
To get that done, right? I mean, if you've looked at the numbers in 2020 right. and 2024, I mean, you know, you got to be naive
that's
not to think there's fraud.
About
okay?
that,
so there's, yeah. So this is an overwhelming victory. To get Trump to win. He wins the swing states by running on the very issues that candidates who run in places like Pennsylvania are told don't talk about those things.
Right.
On the very issues that got him elected by Democrats, independents, and Republicans all coming together in a unique coalition of young voters and old voters and urban voters and rural voters. The most incredible coalition we've seen, I don't know, in modern history. I don't know, in a long time. It seems to me the politically smart thing to do would be to say, listen, we know we've got donors with an agenda, but we've got all these voters that'll get right behind us if we do what they want us to do. And somehow that connection between this incredible victory driven on issues and aggressive dealing with the issues, not hiding from them, not soft talking it, not running as a soft Democrat, but getting right on the issues. Somehow that connection between that victory and what's going on today across Pennsylvania, across the country, it's just not there for the Republican Party. And that, for me, is a major, major defeat.
It's always a disappointment for sure, but never underestimate the power of the grift and the power of, you know, federal money borne by taxpayers all around the country that can be sapped by, you know, showing up in a suit in Washington, D.C., don't underestimate that, and Republicans fall prey to it as well. And that's where you need to just stand with your constituents and you know, but they also have to be willing to support you if you're going to stand in the fight, because you can't do this alone. You're essentially fighting the other party and probably half of your own party when
right.
you do that kind of stuff.
Well, that's why I say when you've got somebody who's, let's say, in the state legislature who's fighting these issues, they should be walking into that house at the opening of a session at the head of a column. And that column should be made up of the voters who care about the issues. We do have, obviously, a very significant problem getting voters to engage and get active and get, you know, look, they got a lot of distractions. They've got Netflix and they've got,
yep.
you know, vacation.
Well,
ski trips.
But they got legitimate concerns. They're, you know, they're working hard every day and they got family issues. You got,
yep.
you know, car problems at school, the normal things of life that overwhelm health problems that overwhelm a lot of people. And they say, look, I did my job. I voted. I sent somebody there that's supposed to be responsible. I'm counting on that person to be my lobbyist, right? That's my representative is my lobbyist. You're supposed
right.
to do what I would do if I were there. And if you're doing what somebody else is, you know, wants you to do instead of me, then, you know, over time, I got to watch that and decide whether that's really in my best interest or not. And quite honestly, voters don't have time to do a lot of that stuff. I get it. It's why voting for the right person in the primary and in the general election is so important. And a person's integrity, their value, their judgment is probably the most important thing, because you're never going to be able to foresee every issue that comes up. And so the sound bites that come out of a debate or that are seen on, you know, a commercial for 15 seconds or 30 seconds are really not as important as what a person's, you know, what their core foundation is. And unfortunately, you know, with all the social media and all the different interactive things that we have, politicians and people that run for office and the apparatus that supports the people that run for office know what you want to hear. They don't care if it's ever going to come to fruition. They know you want to hear it. They're happy to tell you. And if it doesn't work out later, well, it's too bad, you know? And unfortunately, that's how this game is played a lot of times.
Well, you touched on John Fetterman earlier, right? And so here's a guy whose rhetoric has moved clearly to, you know, the interests of the people, sort of, you know, he's talking about things in a different way. The party's his Democrat party's getting really angry with him. But his voting record, when he actually has to cast that vote, it's completely not
left.
Yeah, totally on the Democrat agenda.
Yeah.
The globalist agenda against the interest of his own people.
Don't be fooled.
Right. It's amazing that they're considering primarying him, but it's primarily over, you know, the last, what, 4 or 5 weeks or something like that.
Yeah.
But other than that, other than, you know, a few votes on the Republican side, he's generally been a leftist voter for bigger government and for more control, less freedom. And look, you know, he's honest with people. That's generally who he is. But they just, you know, they see what's right in front of them and don't look at the long term stuff. And I don't blame them. They don't have time. You know, who has time to go look up your senator's votes? Now, you know, to be clear, though, they should have known how he was going to vote when they voted for him, because he was pretty clear about it then, too.
Crystal clear. He was crystal clear. You can't fault him for that. He was certainly honest. We've got just a few seconds left. So we're going to have to cut out. I'm sorry. We've run up against the clock. I thought we had another little bit of time. Representative Perry,
thank you so much
for calling in. Yeah, we really appreciate you giving us some time today. Thanks, and hopefully you'll join us again sometime soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.